Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Big Book Tim from Point Pleasant, New Jersey.
Good evening, everyone. I'm a recovered alcoholic called Big Book Tim. You can hear me out there in the lawn seats, right? It's awesome. I've never been to a meeting where there's tailgating. That's fabulous. Could I get a Philly cheesesteak, hold the onions, please? All right, so let's start the judgment. I have not found it necessary to pick up a drink or a mood or mind-altering substance since May 2nd, 1992, and for that I am grateful. So, judgment, yay! So, my name, Big Book Tim. I did not choose that. I didn't walk into AA and say, you know what, I'm going to be Big Book Tim. You know, it didn't work like that. So the way that kind of worked is that I was sober about 10 years, and there were a bunch of Tims around. There was like four of us that used to go to like the same meetings. And there was a Carpenter Tim, and then there was a Grateful Tim, and there was a Chef Tim, and I was Big Book Tim. Because I talk about the Big Book all the time. All the time I talk about it. And I don't think I'll ever stop. So if you're against the Big Book, this isn't the meeting to be at. You know what I mean? And so on page 132 in the Big Book, it says, we aren't a glum lot. That we absolutely insist on enjoying life. We insist on it. Isn't that amazing? You know, like most people, well, I'd like to enjoy life. Alcoholics are like, I'm going to enjoy it, damn it, you know? And so I always find that it's, it also says on that page that we think that merriment and laughter is an excellent thing. That if newcomers could see no joy in our existence, they wouldn't want it. I don't know about anybody else. I got sober about a month and a half before I turned 22. And so for those of you who think that you're young now and there were a lot of old people now, you know, I walked in and it was like skeletons sitting in chairs. I mean, that's what it was like for me, you know. So I think it's important to, you know, like, lift the mood and laughter and anything, you know, anything that you find funny that I say, whether it may not be funny, laugh. It's okay. Because I tell you, when I got here, if I couldn't laugh, I wasn't staying. I wasn't being miserable in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can tell you that. I was not doing that. So, as is my custom, I always like to tell a joke before I start. So this guy, he's in Alcoholics Anonymous for about 5 months or so, you know, and he's doing okay. And he promises his wife, this is it, this is the last time I'm not doing it. Right? So he's going home one day, and his car just makes that automatic left-hand turn to the bar, as most cars do. And he's in there, and he's drinking, and he's feeling good about it. He's, oh, I think I'll get away with it this time. And then all of a sudden, he vomits on himself. Now he's all upset. He's like, how am I going to explain this? You know, I promised I wasn't going to drink anymore. And so another drunk in the bar says, listen, I got it, man. Here's what you do. You tell her that some drunk threw up on you. And here, put $10 in your front pocket and say he offered to pay for the cleaning. He says, oh, that's a great idea. Right? So he drinks for the rest of the night, thinking nothing of it. And he gets home. His wife is standing there, you know, all mad as usual because he's a mess. And she says, what happened? He says, wait, before you yell at me, here's what happened. And he tells her the story, and he pulls out the money from his pocket. She says, well, how come you have two $10 bills? He says, oh, that. Well, he crept in my pants, too. Thank you, good night. You know? So, I guess we got some people who can identify with that, huh? Yeah. You know, it talks about, in the doctor's opinion, that, you know, the alcoholic's life is the only one he knows. He can't, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. And so, to me, that joke kind of illustrates that, you know. And so, for me, you know, I'll start on my adventure. I was born in New York. Sorry. I was razzed about that before. It was worse than Jersey, you know. How could that be? You never lived in Jersey. Thank you. So I was born there. I'm the oldest of three. I'm a CIA, a Catholic Irish alcoholic. And, you know, I needed a drink before I took a drink. I mean, that's really what my life was. I grew up in an abusive household. You know, that's just how it was. I don't fault them for that. You know, my parents did their best, and their best was awful. You know. Thank you. So that's how it went, you know. And as the result of that, You know, I don't know about anybody else, but, you know, it also says in the doctor's opinion that men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. You know, they're restless, irritable, and discontent until they can, again, find that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once from taking a few drinks. Right? And that was definitely me, okay, because I knew when I had my first drink, right? My mother's a nurse, so, of course, she had a friend who was a nurse, and I already told you that I'm a Catholic, and she found another Catholic, and her friend is like, I mean, she knows all the saint days and stuff, feasts of this, wow, it was like that, you know. So, of course, we did a lot of visiting. You remember visiting? You go to the people's house, and it was like, in my era, it was, you know, children are to be seen and not heard, and we really don't want to see you either, you know. So we were relegated down to the basement while the adults were upstairs playing cards. Right, so you know what that meant. They were just upstairs drinking with cards in front of them, really. That's kind of how that was. And we wondered why we couldn't be up there playing cards and drinking, you know. So this woman that my mother's still friends with today, she had five children, and three girls, and the middle one, the oldest girl was the middle one, and that's who I found and became friends with. And she wrote poetry. You know, and she would read these poems to me. Now, she was like 3 years older than me. And she'd read these poems, and I would go, oh, my God, I feel like that. That's how I feel. How do you know that? How do you know how I feel? You wrote that down. You're in my head. What are you doing? Right? And I would tell her about all these problems going on, because it was pretty obvious to anybody who wasn't just self-absorbed that I was this abused child and there was a lot of crap going on. You know, and that's just how it was. Right? So, I slouched a lot because that's generally what happens to people who are abused. And I didn't look people in the face a lot. And I talked really fast because, you know, I had to tell you everything in the 5 minutes that you were going to talk to me, because if you walked away, I just might die, you know. And then you wouldn't know anything about me. Right? And that's how it was, right? So I needed a drink. Right? So I'm telling her these things, you know. Hey, this is what happened. I'm feeling like this. I'm feeling like that. She goes, don't worry. I got it. I'm like, what? What do you have? She's like, don't worry, I got it. Now, this is 1982. Right? It's June 16th, 1982, as a matter of fact, my 12th birthday. Right? And we're out in the woods. I'm smoking my first cigarette. You remember that feeling, right? All goofy. Right? Now, remember, it's 82. You know, a lot of women had permanence in 1982, and she was no exception. So she reaches, bless you. So she reaches in her bag and she pulls out this bottle about this big, you know, clear liquid. And she unscrews the cap and she says, here, have a drink. I'm like, I'm not drinking that. You squirt that in your hair. And she says, no, give it back. Right? She takes it and smells the bouquet. And she takes that drink and she gets that shudder, you know. And now I'm like, ooh. And she hands it back to me and I sniff it and it smells like black licorice. So now I'm excited because I'm 12. You know, black licorice is great, right? So, nice, right? And I take that swig and it goes down. And I get that shudder, you know? And light switch went off in my head. And it was like, ooh, ah, yeah. Right? You know that feeling, don't you? Because that's what I chased my entire drinking career. That feeling of ooh, ah, yeah. I was restless, irritable, and discontented, and I got that sense of ease and comfort that came at once from taking a few drinks. My very first time I had that sense of ease and comfort. Ooh, ah, yeah. It worked. And I was like, wow, this is great. Right? So now, you know, that's what I chased. And I was good to stay under the radar, you know. And we got alcohol, you know, at the time the drinking age in New York was still 19. And she had an older brother that looked 40. So on Friday nights, they would go over the bridge into Staten Island and pack up the trunks and bring it back. So now I couldn't wait to go visiting, you know, because here I am, I'm 12. The answer is over there, you know, because now here we are in the basement. And as long as we weren't killing each other, getting in trouble, you know, like getting arrested, you know, all that stuff, they didn't. Okay, they're fine. They're fine. There's nothing wrong with them. But meanwhile, we're downstairs, and I'm sitting in this room, and her brothers had older girls over, too. So now that's exciting, because here I'm 12, and there's like 16, 17, 18-year-old girls, and I'm like, right? Being this goofy little kid, aren't I cute? Yeah. And then they would say that, too. You know, that's all like a kid with low self-esteem needed to hear. Oh, my God, he's so cute! You know? Yes, I am! Give me a hug, you know? And that's kind of how it was, you know? So here we are. I'm introduced to this world. And, you know, that now there's all this great music going on, too, because they listen to great music. like the 70s had some great music carried over to the great music. And that was going on, and then they had the black light on, and they had the black light posters, the velvet posters, you remember them? I had tons of them, you know. And because of the outside issues that we can't talk about in the hay. And that's what was going on. And then they had the makeshift table. I mean, who didn't have the crate with the piece of wood on it? You know what I mean? I was introduced to that at 12, you know, like, oh, a table. You know, it's like, and what was the table used for? Playing quarters, of course. You know, so here was this whole culture that I was introduced to with this wonderful feeling attached to it. As opposed to, like, you know, go to Catholic school, pray, you know, and doing the as I like to call them, the Catholic aerobics, you know, the stand-up, sit-down, kneel, stand-up, sit-down, kneel, stand, you know. Right? That's what I was doing. And now, listen, I don't want to disparage any religion. I love religions. I really do. And, you know, and the Big Book says that also. It says, be quick to see where religious people are right. Not where they're wrong, where they're right. Make use of what they have to offer, right? Because they have a sense of what's going on. I'm not sure if that's true, but whatever. So they told me these wonderful things. They told me, you know, like, when you sing, you pray twice as loud, right? So I sang my ass off, right? And I still got beat, okay? So they were telling me, they were saying, if you're good and you do good things are going to happen. They were full of crap. In my life, anyway, because I did good things, and I was told I was bad. Oh, you're bad, you're bad, you're bad, you're bad, you're bad, you're bad, you're bad. Right? And I was told I was bad because I was feeling. I was feeling. Right? No matter what I felt, it was inappropriate. Right? You remember those days? Like, if I was, you know, I fell down and I was crying or somebody hit me and I'm crying. Well, that's inappropriate crying, Tim. Well, why? I'm hurt. You know? Or especially at church. Boy, there was nothing but inappropriate laughter going on at church, man. You know? Like, that was even worse because not only would you get in trouble, but you were damned to hell, too. And but it's like, it was funny, so you weren't allowed to, like, feel. So they squashed all that and said, put that away. But when ooh-ah-yeah happened, all that was free. It was all free. No matter how I felt, it amplified it or it numbed it. That's what it did for me. It did everything I needed it to. It became my God. You know, like all those rituals we have with it. You know, like they call it pre-gaming now, right? Right? Pre-gaming? I didn't, you know, like, it was all the time, right? It was like the point of everything, you know. And it worked. It really worked. It did for me what I couldn't do for myself. It really did. You know, it made me smarter. It made me funnier. It made me better looking. It made me taller, faster, stronger. You name it, it did it. It was God. Absolutely. And I protected it that way, too. You couldn't take my alcohol from me. No way. No way. Like I said, I mean, it's not like I'm a huge guy now, but I was, you know, this little kid, and I would fight you to the death for my six-pack of Michelob. You know what I mean? Like, you're not taking that. I need that because I know I'm going home to hell, and I need to have a little protection against hell. That's what I needed, right? That's what I needed. So like I said, you know, I stayed under the radar for a while, and I was able to do that I found theater, go figure, right? I found theater, and that was a wonderful outlet for somebody who wanted to be anybody but themselves. Because I don't know about anybody else, that's what I wanted. I wanted to be anybody but Tim. I didn't want to be Tim. You didn't want to be Tim, that's for sure. People would tell me, other students in school, they would tell me, man, I don't want to be you. Thank you. You know, like, so at least some people got it, you know? But, so I found theater. And for anybody who doesn't know anything about theater, that's where all the drunks and the drug addicts and the neurotic people hang out, in theater, because they're all like me. Right? They all want to play somebody else, you know? I don't ever want to meet Meryl Streep. She's probably insane, you know? That's a sidebar, right? Outside issues, sorry. Breaking tradition here, right? So I found theater, and I was able to do it, you know, and I was what they call a method actor. Method actors are, whenever you hear anybody say they're a method actor, just say, oh, you're crazy. That's, because that's what it means. You know, method acting is like you take on the role, the character that you are, and you live that 24 hours a day. Right, so now imagine a teenage boy, like,
you know, living characters like Speed in The Odd Couple, who was like a card-playing, cigar-smoking idiot. You know, like, but I needed to because I was an actor. You know, so I was always able to blame anything in my life on that. But, you know, the best parts, I couldn't wait. The applause was great, but it was never enough. It was never enough. I couldn't wait for the cast party. Woo! Ooh, ah, yeah, it was coming. Because that's what it was all about. You know, my head, my thought process was always about, when's the next drink? Like, I could function and move on. I wasn't an alcoholic before I started drinking. Right? I needed alcohol in order to be an alcoholic. That's kind of how that works. Right? But I wasn't an alcoholic immediately either. It took a lot of hard work and dedication to become an alcoholic. Right? Because I drank so much, like I broke my liver. That's how it works. I broke my liver, therefore now I have this brain that has like these chemicals in it, and that's how it is. And it's been proven many times. I mean, I know like 3 people who had liver transplants. And, you know, like, that's a reset button, right? Because that's how I thought. I was like, new liver, yeah, new drinking, yay, right? No, these cats were, like, worse in 4 months, and it was like, so it's got to be a brain thing, doesn't it, right? I'm like, okay, done, proved it to me. So now if I want to drink, I got to get a new brain, you know? So, which some days I'm not adverse to either. As a joke, come on. Not that cold out here. And, so, you know, this is what how it went on, you know, and I talk about this because I went to school up the road. It's so funny. I've never been to Quakertown, and I'm coming out. I'm going, 309. I'm like, 309 goes to Allentown College, which is now DeSale University, because they found money. You know, that's how that worked. And I went to school for theater. Hey, imagine that. Right? Which, for anybody who doesn't know that, if you're thinking about going to college or somebody is, like, theater means slavery. That's what that is, you know, because you don't act. You spend all your time doing what they want you to do for nothing. That's kind of how that works. And they make you feel bad about it, too. So here I was out in Center Valley, Pennsylvania. Right? Yes. And my first cup of coffee was at the Coopersburg Diner. And that's cool. And a lot of late nights there. Huh? So I'm there, and here I am, and I hated everyone because everyone, you know, had their hair long and all the men wore beards, and everybody dressed in black. And they spoke standard American English all the time and smoked their cigarettes a certain way. And that's how it was. And if you weren't like that, you weren't hit. Shut up! You know, like, I grew up, you know, and I played sports in high school, too. So it was like, you know, here's this theater guy who plays sports. Like, that was like, I was like an alien to them. It's like, hey, you want to toss a football around? They're like, a what? You know, a football, you moron, you know? So this is what was going on. So now, like, the theater people, for obvious reasons, were ostracized from the rest of the college community, you know, and now I was ostracized from the theater people. So I was like, yes, this is going to be great, right? But no fear, because I found the people who drank just like me. I found the other people, you know, like the other trolls that were like, this is my bridge, you know. And they were like, right? There were like 4 or 5 of us who were like that, who hated everybody and F the world and it's all their fault and let's go get a, come on, we're going to, you know, and like the amazing thing was, you know, I came to Pennsylvania and like, if I wanted hard alcohol, I had to go to the state store, right? And then there was the beer distributors, you know, it was like, F the state store, you know? And it was like a case of Milwaukee's Best, you know, premium beer. It was like $6. It was like, oh my God, really? I'm in heaven, you know? And so you could kind of get an idea how I drank. I wasn't very sophisticated, you know what I mean? Whatever did the job, you know? I actually drank No Frills beer once. That's what it said on the beer. Okay. You did too, didn't you? Yeah. So this is what went on. So of course, now I'm majoring in drinking, and I'm minoring in sleep, with like some extracurricular activities of class once in a while, just to kind of let them know, yeah, I'm still here, still enrolled. So at the end of that year of the country club, they said, well, we don't need your services anymore here, thanks, Tim. I was like, oh, okay, well, I'll show you. So I went back to you know, meanwhile, I was so dejected, you know, like, The experience of being up there was just awful. I didn't want to act anymore. It was just, like, that's how bad it got. And nobody recognized that alcohol had anything to do with it. How is that possible? Like, you know, an 18-year-old kid who is sleeping in the lounge every night. So, or maybe he's just, like, not fitting in. Like, duh, you know. So I went to the local college, the county college, and they had what they call a second chance program, right? For students who had difficulties at their previous academic institutions. And you had to take this class, right, called Becoming a Master's Student. Because that was the problem. It was my study. You know, I didn't know how to study. I didn't know how to take notes. That was the problem, right? It wasn't the drinking, right? I spent the first 17 days of my college career drunk. And it wasn't 18 because I ran out of money. That's the only reason, right? So they knew where to come for the party. That was it. So, you know, so we had to take that class. It was mandatory, which was great because then they put me in a class with 25 other kids who drank just like me. So now I didn't even have to look. It was like, where are we partying tonight? That's kind of how that went, right? So then I got back into theater and I started doing that stuff. And, you know, so I'm just a crazy person at this point. Drinking, just drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking, you know. And then I ran into, I met a bunch of guys. You know how you always meet a bunch of guys. And we were all kind of the same misfit idiot, you know. I mean, there was like music, theater, laughter, drinking. That's kind of what we all had in common, you know. And one of the guys in the group said, he was like foreshadowing, which is really nice. He said, you know, Tim doesn't get drunk, he gets sober. Right? And I was like, what do you mean, man? You know, like, upset about it. Right? And I just found out, like, a couple of years ago, like, I was his guy. You know, like, he was drinking too much, and the guys were worried about him, and they had, like, a mini intervention. And they're like, dude, you need to slow down a little. He's like, I'm not as bad as Tim. I was like, you son of a... Right? Bad as me, right? What do you mean, bad? Well, I was. So, you know, this is how it kind of went on, you know? And I'd have jobs... And I'd be real good at a job, you know, I'd be fired up and I'm going to be the manager in a week, you know, it was like that kind of thing. New job, what is it? Yes, I can do anything. And, you know, and I had all of that going on, right? And then I would lose the job. And it was never for drinking. You know, it was because they wanted me to get there early in the morning. You know what I mean? Like, 5 o'clock? No, I can't make 5. That's way too early. I'll be there at like 5:10, 5:30. Maybe 7, you know, is that all right? It was a time management problem, you know. Other times it was a back problem. You know, the boss was on my back. My parents were on my back. Really? So, thank you. So, you know, those were the things. It was always some excuse, some trivial excuse, you know. Because when it came down to it, like, I knew, I had the sense of mind, I knew that... When I drank, all bets were off. I couldn't successfully predict the outcome of the night. Nobody could. I mean, I was usually, like, real good to like, midnight. So, you know, it was always, like, good time, Charlie. Everybody wanted Tim around. It was good time. Told lots of jokes. And then, like, the demons would come. You know, and I'd want to go break into somebody's house and rearrange their furniture. You know. That's, you know, like, Tim, what are you doing? Nothing. You know. Crazy, insane. You know, like, I didn't want to live. I didn't want to make it past 23. That was my goal. You know, live hard, die young, leave a beautiful corpse. And then look at me now, you know. So that didn't work, did it? You know, and I would do things like I would ride on people's hoods of their car in the parking lot, you know, holding on, going, come on, knock me off. Right? Oh, just me, right? I'm the only one who did that? No way. There's a few bikers here. I know they did it too. You know, because I was nuts. It was crazy. Out of my mind crazy. So, but yet I didn't get into trouble much. You know what I mean? Because there was always somebody worse than me. I was like really careful to do that. Always someone worse than me. You know, I dressed up pretty well. So I was always good at doing that too. You know, and I found a way. I don't know how alcoholics do this. I found a way to find people who would buy drinks for me. You know, I knew bartenders who would hook me up. Bouncers who would let me in, women who would drive me around, buy my alcohol for me. I mean, like,
I don't know how we do that. It's just an amazing thing. I know I would never do that now. Like, no, I'm not taking you anywhere. And so I thank God for those kind of people. So I'm doing a show. It's 1992 now. And I'm doing a show. And there's this guy in the show that I used to party with, right? And he's not drinking anymore. He's not partying. But he's breaking my butt every day. He's annoying the hell out of me every day. Every day in rehearsal. All you have to do is admit you're powerless, Tim. I'm like, powerless over what? Man, what are you talking about? He's like, everything. Just admit you're powerless. You know, and this was every day. So imagine like 4 hours of rehearsal every day of the week and somebody saying, you know, like, because now I'm angry because I'm unmedicated. You know, because I have to concentrate for rehearsal, so I can't drink during rehearsal. So now I'm waiting, because now, so it's all wearing off, and I'm just like, oh, come on, we got to do this. I know, hey, and he'd be happy. You know, he's feeling a little happy. Like, they're all happy. Just have to admit you're powerless, Tim. You're going to be powerless in a minute. You keep it up. And that went on and on and on, right? So then we're at the cast party. Remember I told you the cast party is the best part of doing a show? Right, we're at the cast party, and this guy's there with me. Right? He's there, and I'm excited. Just did a good show. And meanwhile, he's got another guy with him. Right? It's like Dave's guys, Big Dave. Which I want to thank for asking me to come. Thank you. I appreciate that. And he's standing there next to me, and he's got his arms folded. He's looking down at me, you know? And I'm like, come on, man, have a drink. And we did a great show. And he's like, I can't. I'm like, what do you mean you can't? He's like, oh, I can't. I'm like, you can't just have one? He's like, no. I said, oh, all right, well, I'll have one for you. Right? So this guy looks down at me and says, don't worry, Tim, we're saving you a seat. So I'm saving, who are you talking? Let's you outside. Meanwhile, like, I'm 130 pounds, you know what I mean? And this guy is huge, and he could just thump me. So, and I'm like, let's go outside, and we'll talk about a seat, you know, like, fortunately for me, he didn't, right? So this is how that all goes. So that's my life is like that. So now, it's May 1st, 1992. Now, by this time, I managed to get a job. Another one. And I'm working. And I've achieved my dream. I did. I achieved my dream. I became a waiter. So you get it, right? So here I am. I'm waiting tables, and I've arrived. And so, you know, it's a Friday night, and I'm going to meet my buddy. Now, this is, again, I'll show you how crazy my thinking is. I didn't have my license. Right, not for any DUI, which I should have many, okay, but because when I was younger, I got speeding tickets, and they don't like that, so they want you to pay, and I don't like that, because I needed my money for drinking, you know what I mean? Like, so they said, well, we're not going to let you drive, we're going to suspend your license, and I thought, oh, that's great. People were like, what? Well, don't you understand? Like, if I don't have a license, I'm not going to drive my car. And if I don't drive my car, I'm not going to get a DUI. Makes perfect sense to me, right? Because that's how I thought. So I have somebody drive me to his place, and this is another buddy of mine who was the poet. And, you know, so we're going to stroll to the local establishment to imbibe to oblivion. Right? We're just two idiots from Jersey going to get drunk, you know. But that's how we thought of ourselves. Like, we were much more important than we really were. So we go, and we're drinking, you know, the kind of drinking that you do. You drink, you just, what'd you drink? Everything, you know, drinking. And then those two words that we all love, last call. And that's what we did. That's what we did. We just burst into laughter, because we knew, like, it was last call for these people. We were going somewhere else, right? Because last call meant for who, right? And, like, again, I told you, like, he had a girlfriend who was more than willing to come and pick us up and take us to another town that the bars closed an hour later. I don't know why. Right? Like, we were useless by that point. So, of course, we go to another bar where I know the owner, I know the bartender, I know the bouncer. So in we go. Yeah, we're big shots, you know. We're in. So now I'm drinking, and I'm talking to this guy that I have no idea. To this day, if he ran into me, I'd have no idea who he is. And I'm talking to him, you know, like those conversations you have about AstroTurf with strangers, you know. I hate it. I love it, you know. It's like one of those kind of conversations. So I'm having this conversation, and I turn to, like, put my cigarette or my drink, and I turn back, and I spill my drink all over this guy's girlfriend, right?
And now he gets up and he's like the size of a couch, you know. And he's going to kill me. Because, I was just loud and obnoxious. Imagine that. All night. So this guy steps in the way and pushes me out of the way and says, leave Maloney, he's drunk. Right? So I'm like, oh, thanks, man. But meanwhile, I take my 8-pack of nips to go. You know, because like the big book talks about, here's the man who goes to sleep at night so intoxicated he should sleep the night through. But there he is early in the morning looking for the bottle he misplaced before. Right? But I didn't think that wasn't me, because it wasn't a bottle. It was 8 of them, you know, like, and they were small bottles, right? So, you know, so we're outside, and I'm drunk, and I got my nips, and I, you know, and then I fall, and I break one of my bottles, and now I'm annoyed, because now I only have 7, you know, and my OCD is even numbers, so now I'm like, I got to drink one right now. You know, I couldn't go home with 7. I had to, you know, just... So we get in the back of the car, and I tell them, you know, hey, listen, don't go through this, this town that nobody's supposed to go through. And then I pass out, right? Because that's what I did. I don't know about anybody else's existence, but, like, I passed out and came to. That I didn't go to sleep and wake up. I passed out and came to. That was my life. So I pass out, and I come to, and I see these pretty blue and red lights happening, and I realize I'm going to get ill, right? So I go to get out of the car. This ominous voice says,
get back in the car.
Oh, okay. So I'm sitting in the car, and then Tim starts coming to. What is he thinking? He is. Out of the car I go, you know. So now I'm out, like, oh, no, get back in the car. I'm not getting in the car. Get back in the car. I'm not getting in the car. I'm going to be sick. No, you better get in the car. So then I sit on the curb, you know. Next thing I know, I'm face down on the hood of the car. Okay. Screaming, I'm not resisting arrest. No crap. Right. So they take me down to the station, and they're poking at me like they do with drunks, which is always amazing to me. And meanwhile, my father had got sober a couple months before that. So, of course, the world needed to get sober. You know those people. I'm sober. Everybody should be sober. You know, you have a problem. You know, there's a better way of living. Come, you know, get away from me. What's the matter? So that's what it was like. So I go home, right? Now I'm remorseful. Oh, I'll never do it again. I'm so sorry. I'm so embarrassed. And you know that. Right? I passed out. I come to. I take a shower. I walk to work. Right? Remember, no license. Walk to work. And I get to work, and I walk up to my first table, and I say, can I get you something to drink? And everything goes white. Can't see. So I'm like, oh, will you excuse me? And I start, like, feeling my way back to the back of the restaurant. My eyesight started coming back. I drank so much, I blinded myself. I was that poisoned by alcohol. That's what happened, right? So I get back. They had mercy on me, sent me home. So I went home, passed out, came to somewhere around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm sitting there with my sunglasses on, right, smoking a cigarette. That feeling that I had 1,000 times before. And the words, I'm going to die, came out of my mouth. And I knew that was God, because I argued with it. Right? I'm going to die. What do you mean you're going to die? I'm not going to die. No, you're going to die. I'm not going to die. When am I going to die? You promised? When? When am I going to die? No, you're going to die. And the reason that I argued with it, because I knew that the words, I'm going to die, meant I had to quit drinking. I didn't want to quit drinking. That was my God, right? So how dare you? So now I'm stuck, you know, and of course here comes Dad, righteous Dad. Are you done now? Right? So I get on the call, and I get on the phone, and I call that guy, remember from the play, that was telling me, what you have to do is admit you're powerless, and, you know, who's at the cast party, and I call him up, and I'm like, hey, man, you got to help me. He's like, whoa, what's up? I'm like, I got to quit drinking, man. He's like, I can't help you. I'm drunk. Right? They talk about Abby, right? You know? I'm like, right, so now I'm months of you, you don't know. So I go to my first meeting that night, and it was the discussion meeting, you know, as a speaker, and then, it was the argument meeting is what I call them. It was the, oh, you know them. You know, the speaker speaks, and then everybody argues with them, you know. Right, so I'm there again, and my mom's with me. sitting next to me. So now here I am, that little kid again, and I'm in trouble because I was bad. Right? And then Dad's sitting a couple rows in front, and he's turned sideways, and he's got his coffee, and the woman's speaking. I have no idea who she is either. And she's talking, and everything she's saying, he's going, "That's me, that's me, that's me, that's me." And I'm like, "Shut up!" Right? It's like, who? Right? You know, so then we get up at the end of the meeting, and we have a nice way of closing, you know. And we get up, and we all hold hands, and we say the Our Father, and I went, "No way!" Remember, 14 years of Catholic school? Right? There was nothing that you were going to teach me about the Our Father. Nothing. I know what I'll do. I just won't drink today. That's what I'll do. Peace, right? I know your motto. Oh, yeah, 90. Yeah, do 90. Yeah, I won't do it for 90. Right? So that's what I did. I didn't drink. And held on to everything like this. Talked through my teeth. You remember those days? There's probably still some of you do that, right? How you doing, Tim? I'm fine. You're still not drinking? Yeah! How's that going? Great! Wow, looks like you need a drink. You better get out of here, you know. I'm just not drinking today, you know. So that's what I did, right? So then I'm sitting, it was my 90th day, and I'm sitting with an earth person. You know, those people who can drink and not get in trouble, right? I'm sitting with him. Now, of that group, you remember the group of guys that I told you about? He was like the idiot who always drove. You know, he was like the dumb guy who you got to do whatever you wanted him to do. It was that guy. You know, or the one, just whatever it was. He was the dumbest person I had ever known. So we're sitting there. I'm like, man, this sucks. He's like, what? I said, I haven't had a drink in 90 days and nothing has gotten better. And he says, here's God again. You ready? He says, well, you just thought you were going to quit drinking and everything was going to clear up. It doesn't work that way. He says, why don't you go give that AA thing a try? So now, what? yeah, go do that AA thing. So, like, I'm kind of, like, looking around, you know, like, did somebody just tell him this? I mean, right? So I said, all right, well, what do I have to lose at this point? Because I'm miserable, and I'm not drinking. So I'm like, what am I, that's the answer? AA is the freaking, all right, I'll go, you know. So I go, and it's a Monday night. And it was really cool. It was kind of like this. It was back in the days when there were still smoking meetings, which was cool. I don't think I would have gotten sober if I couldn't smoke. Because I'm, like crazy. And it was great. I walked into the room, and the room was like from the smoke from like above your head to the ceiling. It was great. And I walked into this room, and the first person I meet at the door was my hairdresser. And she's like, hi, how you doing? I'm like, She's like, what are you doing here? I'm like, same thing you're doing here. What am I doing here? Like, I heard they had good donuts, you know? I have ring around the collar. That's why I'm in an AA meeting. So I'm like, all right, I see. And then I see that guy. Remember that guy that said, we're saving you a seat? He's across the room. Right? So I go up to him and I tap him. He turns around. He's like, hey. I'm like, hey, you still got that seat for me? He's like, sure. He puts me in the front row. Right? And I sit down. And for the first time, since June 16th, 1982, I went, because for some reason, I knew it was going to be okay. That feeling of, ooh, ah, yeah, came from sitting in that seat. Unbelievable, right? So now, meeting's over, right? So now he's got some questions for me. You know, the interview process is about to happen. Those questions, and remember, he's a big guy, so he's looking down at me. He says, so are you done? And I'm like, you know, I don't know. And he's like, well, you better effing know. And I'm like, oh, hey. Like, that's the first time I heard that word, you know. He says, you got a big book? I said, what's that? He says, you got $5? I said, sure. And I handed him $5 because I was used to owing people money anyway, you know. He gave me this book, this one right here. This is the one, my original big book. You have to kill me to get it out of my hands now. It's all nice and falling apart. I love it. Right? And he says, read it. It's all about you. He says, there's some cute stories in there. He'll tell you why you drink and why you do the things you do. If you have any questions, you can ask me. I'm like, okay. I'm thinking like, wow, a book about me. And he says, do you have a sponsor? I said, well, what's a sponsor? He says, well, it's somebody to help you work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, what are steps? He says, well, it's somebody who has some time away from drinking. You know, they could kind of show you the way and show you around. Now, meanwhile, I knew he hadn't drank for a while. I said, well, how much time do you have? And he says, well, I just have today. Well, how many just todays do you have? So he says, well, if I make it in November, it'll be 7 years. I said, good, you're my sponsor. Right? So he says, okay. So he writes his number down on a piece of paper and he hands it to me. And I look at him like most men look at other men when they hand their phone number. And obviously he looked at other people that way too, because he says, listen, you know, you just call me every day. You check in. He says, listen, hey, it's Tim. Everything's going okay. Hey, it's Tim. Things are going crappy. So that way, when the crap hits the fan, the phone won't weigh 500 pounds. So I had a couple brain cells left, and it made sense to me. I was like, oh, okay, makes sense. I get it. He says, do you have a home group? I said, what's a home group? He says, well, it's somewhere that you go every week, and people get to know you, and you get involved, and you get commitments. I said, well, this is only my second meeting, dude. He goes, and he grabs a meeting book, and he starts circling meetings in the area. He says, go to a meeting every night. He says, when you find one you like, you go up to the secretary, you say, I want to join the home group. I said, does it cost anything? He says, no. He says, $1 if you have it when the basket comes around, but it doesn't cost anything. Oh, okay, good. So I go to my meeting the next night, and that was an 8:30 meeting, and it was it's still known as the circle jerk, really, because it's one of those psychobabble meetings, you know, where we all feel good, and I love you, and you love me, and we're all good, and I'm so glad you're all here. Right? And it's in the circle, right? So I walk in, and I'm like, now remember, I'm 22. Right? I walk in, I'm looking, and there's just all these beautiful women. And I went, this is my home group. Because right? Yeah? It says attraction, not promotion, you know what I mean? I was definitely attracted. Right? So I got involved, you know, and that's how it went. And I just said, right, so now... Now, remember, it's 1992, so there were still like 28-day rehabs everywhere. It was like Burger King, McDonald's rehab. You know, it was like that's how it looked. Right? So now there were all these young people around that I drank with. So now I'm bumping into people at meetings, and they're like, hey, what are you? You know, and they always ask the stupid question, like, what are you doing here? Like, what are you, research, what do you think I'm, you know, like, what am I doing here? I'm bored. I got nothing better to do. Right, so here I, you know, and everybody's talking about the fourth step, right? They're going, oh, have you done your fourth step? Have you done your fourth step? What did you do? Oh, no, my sponsor says I'm not ready for my fourth step. And on the fourth step, ooh. Right? But meanwhile, like, I remembered, you know, because I actually, for the first time, I actually listened to something that somebody told me to do. That guy, my first sponsor, when he told me to read the book, I did. And I got excited about it, right? Because he was right. It is about me. I don't know if it's about anybody else, but it's about me. I read it, I'm going, oh my God, that's me, I do that. I'm like, I do that, and I do that. Oh yeah, I do that too. Wait a minute, how'd they know I did that? You know, now I'm paranoid, right? Because, you know, everything's about me anyway, right? You know, I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. And So here I am, I'm excited. You know, they're talking about the fourth step, and I remember the fourth step, because it looks different than every other step, right? On page 65, the columns, resentful at, the cause, the effect, right? So I went back and I'm reading it, I'm looking at it, I'm going, oh my God, I'm looking, you know, and on page 64, it starts telling me why, what's it all about, right? And it told me that liquor is but a symptom of my problems. I had to get down to the causes and conditions of what had been blocking me. But I could tell you that now because I have a brain in my head and I'm, you know, blessed with that. But back then, it told me this is why I'm a jerk, right? And I didn't want to be a jerk anymore. And it told me, in order to get over being a jerk, you got to do this thing. Right? So now I'm excited. So now I go back to my sponsor. Right? I'm like, hey, man, we're going to do this fourth step. He's like, what? I said, the fourth step. We're going to do this fourth step, right? He's like, I want you to just slow down. Slow down? I want to get well. He's like, well, why don't you just don't drink and go to meetings for a while? I'm like, where the hell does it say that? I said, listen, you told me to read this book. I started reading this book. I heard about this fourth step. I read about the fourth step. I want to do this fourth step. I said, you're going to help me or somebody else will. And he said this. He said these words that he said many times since. He says, well, you know best, Tim. So I did it. I did my first fourth step. My resentments, my fears, my harms. Not perfect, but I was thorough and I was honest as I could possibly be then. Right? And then I had a list. And I was ready. I was ready to do a fifth step. And then, you know, I don't know about anybody else, but I had some trust issues. Right? So thank God the book, you know, they talked about this different way. You know, so I told, like, a closed-mouth friend about some stuff. And then I told a priest about stuff that, you know, was illegal, and because I knew he had to keep his trap shut, so 14 years of Catholic school paid off for something, right? And so, and there was a guy that I respected, there was a priest that I respected, and he heard my confession, and then I told my sponsor some stuff, and I dumped everything that I had. And those fifth-step promises came true. I could feel myself standing a little taller. I started looking people in the eye. I started smiling. Started laughing a bit, right? Because I later found out that, you know, admitting that I was powerless over alcohol was only a beginning, right? I had to admit that my life was unmanageable too, and I had no idea what that meant. And I had this book, and I had a sponsor who guided me to page 52 and told me about unmanageability. He took those things and he turned them into questions. He said, "Are you having problems with personal relationships?" I said, "No, I don't have any." He said, "Were you a prey to misery and depression?" I said, "No, I just don't like the way things are, and I like sleeping a lot." He says, "Could you be of real use to anyone?" I said, "Sure, I'm a waiter." He's like, "Well, beyond that." I said, "I don't know what you mean." He said, can you earn a living?" I said, "Sure, I just told you I was a waiter." He says, "Yeah, but how many jobs have you had?" I said, "This year?" Right? He said, "Can you control your emotional nature?" I said, "I'm not emotional, I'm just passionate." Right? He says, "Are you full of fear?" I said, "I'm not afraid of anything, except cops and women." Yeah, worse than the cops, right? And so he says, "You know, are you unhappy?" I said, "Only when I'm sad." Those, I'm like, they're funny answers, but they're true. That's how I thought. That's where I was. I didn't get it, right? So I want to say to I have like 6 minutes. What can I say in 6 minutes? A whole lot, believe it or not. I found that God that made things come out of my mouth, that made things come out of other people's mouths, that put people in my way and kept me safe and protected. I found that God in Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? And it talks about that on page 55. It talks about God. Now, for anybody who may be wondering what Alcoholics Anonymous is about, it's about God. If you don't believe me, read the book. I promise you, it's in the book. Nowhere in this book, and I don't think in any literature, because I also have a grapevine, the digital archive. I have a subscription because I'm crazy, and I want to know everything. Right? And I plugged in the search, "don't drink," and nowhere in our literature does it have those two words next to each other. Isn't that amazing? Don't drink. We don't offer don't. Alcoholics Anonymous is for people who want to stop drinking. And the solution to that is God. It's a personal God. That's the as we understood him. And for each and every person that there is in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a singular God for that person. You might agree on that may be your God together, but as long as it's not me, as long as it's not human, everything else is fine with me. It's all broad. It's broad and inclusive, never exclusive. Okay, so that's what's wonderful about it. We're all sitting here tonight. I don't know about anybody else. There's a higher power here tonight. I feel it. Whatever it may be. You know, like the serenity prayer we say, like, you know, God does everything for me. Everything. Everything in my life. I'm not perfect. I'm not a saint. I'll never be a saint. Never will be. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. I'm not one of them, definitely. Okay, but there's a few places that that it says being convinced, we're convinced. And Bill used that word a lot. We're convinced, which means that we're unshaken. It means that we have a belief, we have a faith. Okay, and it talks about what we have. You know, when it says if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it? Because I didn't know what that meant. When people said, "Do you want what we have?" I was like, "Yeah, man." And they're like, "Do you know what we have?" I was like, "Yeah, and you're not drinking." And they're like, "No, it's not what we have." I'm like, "Well, what do you have?" And my sponsor, you know what he'd say to me? This is one of, he'd say, I don't know, Tim, what's the big book say about it? Oh, my God. I would say everything. Hey, what's what if this is? And that was always his answer to everything. What does the big book say about it? I finally said, what the hell do I need you for? He says, I know what page it's on. So when I started talking about the big book, I always quoted the page so that way people can, you know, I passed on what I learned, you know. I give freely of what I found, right? So this book holds the answers to all my problems. All my problems. It says that in How It Works. There's one who has all power. Not like just power where alcohol is concerned. All power. That one is God. May you find him now. It doesn't say your coffee commitment. It doesn't say your sponsor. It doesn't say your network. It's your God. Okay? You know, and I hear a lot about, like, there's too much God in AA. I hear that a lot now. I'm like, go somewhere else. It works. It works. Millions of people. It works. Okay? And I say this because, remember I told you my father got sober before I did. But he didn't stay sober. Because he believed in the don't drink and go to meetings. He believed that he wasn't powerless over anything. His exact words. And after 6 years, he went back to drinking. And a little less than a year, he had a stroke. And he spent the next 11 years of his life spiraling and getting sicker and sicker and sicker until he died. And 2 years before he died, we were sitting around the table outside in the backyard. You know how, like, for those of you who have big families and you're the only alcoholic in it, or the only recovering or recovered alcoholic in your family, it always comes around to recovery and they want to question your levitating because you have God, you know. They want to do that. So that's what was going on. And out of nowhere, my father said, you know, I thought I was going to fool them. And we said, what? He says, yeah, I thought I was going to tell them how it was going to be. Right? He was the man at the end of his life with regret because he didn't have what I have. Okay? And if you want to know what I have, it's on page 25 in this book. The great fact is this, and nothing less. Nothing less. It could be more than this. That we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward God, toward the universe, and the people in it. The central fact in our lives today is the absolute certainty that God has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to do for us what we can never do for ourselves. If that's what you want, because that's what I have, you need to be willing to go to any length to get it. Okay? And if you want that, find somebody who's willing to go to any length to bring you to it. Because it says that, too. If you want to get well, we'll do anything to help you. At least I will. I know that. Doesn't just mean, like, you know, like, oh, don't call me if you're drunk. What? No. That's God's way of saying, hey, man, you need to be out on that firing line. I came out to Quakertown to talk to all you people because that's what God wants me to do. It's God's car. It's God's gas, not mine. Without God, I didn't have any of that. My keys, I always talk about that, my keys. Right? The day I drink, I'm giving my keys to the bartender. Because when I drank, I didn't have any. I didn't. My house, the house I lived in was always open. So I didn't need a house key. I didn't need a car key because I didn't have a car. I didn't have a job and responsibilities. Didn't need keys. Now I have keys. Keys mean God to me. So, you know, if you're sitting out there and you're struggling, please get out of your own way. Get out of your own way. Find a God. Make it yours. Because you need to trust it. Your God will get me drunk. My God will get me, you know, my God will get you drunk. That's how it is. You know, my sincere wish and desire is that I hope I help somebody tonight. And so that's it. Thank you.